You are listening to the podcast of Providence Church in Austin, Texas. We hope this message raises your affections for Jesus and helps you live out the gospel in everyday life.
Well, watch out, the Bible's getting political, isn't it? Might get controversial up in here today. It's a little bit political as we read it today. In one sense, the Bible is always political. Right, because the Bible, in many ways, is about a people and the way that people is governed. Kendall's already mentioned it, but last week we saw that we are a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation. We are a people for God's own possession. We are ruled or governed by the King of Kings. Right, our ultimate allegiance is to King Jesus. But that raises the question, if that's our allegiance, then how are we to relate to earthly authorities? To earthly government authority. And that's where Peter, obviously, is taking us today. Shortly after the President of the United States was elected, there were articles that were written about him that said, he's not my president. Right? There were political pundits and some celebrities. It was like, not my president. Right? You could buy a t-shirt or a bumper sticker that said on it, had his face on it, that said, not my president. Now, that was in the year 2000 and 2004, when George W. Bush was elected president. A lot of people said, not my president. That was also in the year 2008 and 2012, when Barack Obama was elected president. And a lot of people said, not my president, uh-uh. And it was in the year 2016, just a few months ago, when Donald Trump was elected president. Not my president. So apparently it's an equal opportunity slogan. Right? I mean, the heart behind the slogan is what? I will not bring my life under the authority of someone I disagree with. Which is amazingly American, isn't it? You think about it, our country was founded, was birthed out of rebellion against a government that we didn't agree with. And so there's still, I think, something in our hearts, deep down, that resists authority, that says, I will not be ruled, I will not come under authority, especially under the authority of someone who doesn't share my values. I think as Christians, we have a lot of the same feelings, but we have a way of sanctifying that. That rebellious tendency toward authority, we kind of spin the rebelliousness in our heart and call it holiness. We're like, we're Christians, so Jesus is our King. So we don't ultimately have to submit to earthly authorities, right? We're exiles. We are strangers in this place. This is not our home. Hasn't Peter been saying that to us in this book? So we are not ultimately accountable to honor pagan, ungodly authority. And to that, Peter says, not so fast, man. Not so fast. This is a turning point in 1 Peter. It's a transition. Verses 11 and 12 transition us out of where we've been to a new section that we'll look at over the next few weeks. What Peter's established so far is who we are. We are God's royal people living as exiles. In other words, we are resident aliens. This is not our home, but we're living as exiles here, but we're God's royal people. That's who we are. We're citizens of another country. And now he's going to turn to begin to talk about how are we supposed to live? Like, how are we supposed to conduct ourselves in all the various relationships that we have in our life as exiles? And let me read verse 11 and 12 again, because this is the transition. Verse 11, 1 Peter 2, verse 11. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners in exile, so that's who we are, to abstain from the passions of the flesh, which wage war against your soul. And then here's how we're supposed to conduct ourselves. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable or excellent, so that when they speak against you as evildoers, and they will, they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation. And so live an honorable life, literally live an attractive life, a beautiful life, a life characterized by good deeds wherever God plants you. Like, meaning in all the various relationships you find yourself in and whatever settings you find yourself in, live a good life. Live an honorable life. Now, what does that goodness look like? That attractive life when it comes to relating to civil authority? What does it look like when it comes to working in a situation that might be unjust, employment situations that are bad? What does it look like in marriage? What does it look like in the church? And that's where Peter's taking us. Government, employment, marriage, the church. That's where we're headed. And I want to say this. What he's going to say about that good life, that attractive life, is a little bit surprising. And I think it chafes against our natural tendency or desires. And so I want to warn you. Your and my tendency these next 4 weeks is going to be to resist what Peter's saying. We're not going to like some of what he's saying. All right, but I want you to hear him out, because what he's saying is glorious. There is great glory in these relationships as we begin to understand what he's saying. All right, so today we're talking about government authority, civil authority. As exiles, how are we to relate to government? Even a government we disagree with, maybe especially a government we disagree with, maybe even a government that's opposed to us in some way. How are we supposed to relate to that government? And Peter, I think, answers two questions in our text. Number one, what are we called to do? And number two, why do we do it? All right, what do we do? What's God calling us to, and why do we do it? Let's start with what are we called to do. It's right there in verse 13 and 14. Let me read it again. Verse 13. Be subject, or some translations read, submit yourselves, for the Lord's sake, to every human institution or authority, whether it be to the governor as supreme, or to governors, or to the emperor as supreme, or to governors as sent by him to punish those who do evil and praise those who do good. So submit yourselves to the government, which involves, verse 17, honoring everyone, loving the brotherhood, fearing God, and honoring the emperor. Now, last week, we said that in verse 9, Peter said that we are a royal priesthood. We are a holy nation. Like, royalty coursing through our veins. We are ready to rule, aren't we? We're ready to set up Christ's dominion, kingdom on earth. And yet, the first thing that Peter tells us as the royal people of God is submit, which does not sound very royal. He says, submit yourselves to every human authority. Submission, you know, is just what it sounds like. Sub, like submarine, like come under, mission. Come under somebody else's mission. Respect their authority, their title, and help their mission flourish. Come under them so that they can flourish in their mission. That's what submission means. And he says, submit yourself to every, not some, every human institution, that is every structure, every system, every organization created by human beings to help society flourish. Submit yourself to that structure. Now, in Peter's context, the structure of the government was the emperor as supreme, ruling over everything. It'd be kind of like what our federal government is. And then he had his governors who did stuff for him, and they were placed in different regions of the country, kind of like our state government. Peter says, not only submit to that emperor, what else does he say? Honor. Honor the emperor. That is so radical when you think about the fact that Peter's emperor, you know who it was? Nero. Nero. You know anything about Nero? He was immoral. He was extravagant. He was arrogant. He was compulsive. He was controlling. He was corrupt. And I'd be like, not my emperor. I didn't vote for that guy. And Peter says, no, honor him. Did you know in the last years of Nero's reign, there was a fire, a big fire in Rome, burned down lots of the city. And Nero needed a scapegoat to blame the fire on to take the pressure off himself politically. And so he decided, I'm going to blame the Christians because they're kind of a marginal group and no one really trusts them anyway. We'll blame the Christians. And this began the first systematic persecution of Christians by the government. Nero would host lavish parties at his palace, and to light up his palace that in the evenings, he would light Christians on fire as torches, and they would watch them burn into the night. And he and his government took great amusement in that kind of sadistic injustice. Now, that probably had not happened yet when Peter wrote this letter down. But you know what? Peter knew what that crazy governor was, or that emperor was capable of. He knew what Nero was capable of, and yet he says, honor that leader and submit to him. Honor him. It's crazy. It's radical. It's not surprising, though, when you think about what Peter's Lord, Jesus, did, right? Because Jesus himself submitted himself to ungodly government, to a governor, in fact, Pontius Pilate. Remember, he was on trial before Pontius Pilate. Remember what Pilate said to Jesus? Pilate said, Jesus, I have authority to crucify you, or I have authority to let you go. And Jesus said, yes, you do have authority, but you wouldn't have any authority if God hadn't given it to you. Don't you know that Jesus could have crushed Pilate? He could have been like, I'll show you authority, right? Crushed him, but he didn't. He acknowledged Pilate's God-given authority, and he submitted himself to it. Here's why this is really important. We are the people of Jesus. That means our lives are tied up in his life. That means our lives are to look like his life, and Jesus submitted himself to ungodly government authority. Pilate was just one example of that. Now, what does this mean practically for us to submit to governing authorities as Christians? Well, I want to start with what it does not mean, because I know we're all feeling tension about this. I know we're all thinking about the exceptions to this. We're like, but what about, right? It's funny how when there's a clear teaching of Scripture, our minds go immediately to the exception, right? Jesus is the only way to God. But what about the dude on the island who's never heard about Jesus? Let's talk about that for a minute. That's what we want to talk about. Clear teaching of Scripture, but there are exceptions, and I want to talk about what it does not mean first. Submitting to government does not mean that we obey in every situation or every circumstance. Like, if our government asks us to disobey God, we've got to disobey the government, right? I mean, Peter was an example of this. In Acts chapter 5, the civil authorities had thrown the apostles in jail because they kept preaching the gospel. And they're like, we told you guys to quit preaching about Jesus, but you have filled the entire city with his name. And so that's why we're throwing you in jail. And what does Peter say? You know what? We got to obey God rather than men. We got to obey God. Right? So here's a good principle. When the government commands us to do something that God forbids, or when the government forbids us to do something that God commands, we cannot obey that. We cannot obey. Verse 17 says, honor the emperor, but what? Fear God. He's the only one we fear. He is our ultimate allegiance. All right? Our brothers and sisters in China today are gathered in worship just like us, because they believe that God commands it and God calls them together. But most of our brothers and sisters in China do it in civil disobedience because their government forbids it, right? So submitting to government doesn't mean we obey in every circumstance. Secondly, submitting to government does not mean we, on the flip side, worship our government, right? We don't worship our leaders. One of the fastest growing religions in Peter's day was emperor worship, where they would set up the emperor's god and they would worship him. We're not prone to do that. We're not going to outright worship our leaders. I do think we're prone to political idolatry. I think it's easy for us to think if we just get the right people in government and the wrong people out of government, all our problems will be solved. That's idolatry. I think we're prone to the idol of nationalism, potentially. The belief that if we just get the right political platform in place, then we will achieve American exceptionalism and everything will be right in the world. And I want you to hear this. America being great is great. I want that. It'd be great if America's great. It's not our hope, right? It is not our hope. So as Christians, we do not worship our country, and we do not worship our leaders. We have one king. His name is Jesus. And by the way, as Christians, we care about the whole world, right? Not just America. Because we are what? Part of a larger kingdom made up of people from every tongue, tribe, and nation. That's who we are. All right, so it doesn't mean worship our government. And lastly, submitting to government does not mean we don't seek change. It doesn't mean we don't challenge systemic injustice. Here's the thing about our government system that's pretty great. We can simultaneously submit to government and seek to change things at the same, we can do this at the same time. It's pretty great. The civil rights movement was a wonderful example of this. A movement of people, right? Many of them Christians in the 1950s and 1960s engaged in nonviolent protest. They engaged in dialogue. They engaged in lobbying and working with Congress to repeal unjust laws and to replace them with just laws. And I think we would all agree there's still a long way to go. But it was amazing what happened in those decades. And we should do that. We should seek change wherever there's injustice. Like wherever the least of these or the marginalized or the poor or the weak don't have a voice, don't have representation, we should seek change. But I think we should seek to change as far as we as possible within the system that God has in place, right, in our country. All right, what does it mean to submit to government? I just want to say a couple of things about what it does mean. Number one, it means we obey the law. We obey the law, even laws we think are stupid or insignificant or arbitrary. We obey them. Like most laws are in place for the good of society, and actually God has not made us the judge of which ones we get to obey and not obey. I don't know if you remember in Matthew chapter 22, someone came up to Jesus and asked him, "Hey Jesus, is it right to pay taxes to the government?" And he knew they were talking about his government, Caesar, the government that in many ways was oppressing his people. And so he knew that a percentage of his tax dollar was going to go towards oppression. So Jesus, should you give money to that kind of oppression? And Jesus was like, "Well, has anybody got a dollar?" And somebody was like, "Yeah, I got a dollar right here." And he's like, "Whose name? Let me see it. Whose name is on that dollar?" And the guy was like, "Well, I think it says the United States of America." And Jesus was like, "All right, well, give to the United States of America what belongs to them, and give to God what belongs to him. That thing says the United States of America on it, so give it to them. They own it." And the guy was like, "All right, then." Now you think, well, that's easy for Jesus to say. He didn't even own a home, right? Have you seen my... I'll show you my property tax bill. It's terrible. I have a larger tax burden than Jesus did. But Jesus says, no, part of what it means to follow me is to obey the civil authorities. Like, they're in place for a reason. So give them what they're owed. Give them their stuff without complaint. And give God what he owes, which, by the way, is your entire life. Here's the second thing submitting to government means. It means obeying the law, but it also means honoring our leaders and our authorities. When verse 17 says honor their emperor, it means acknowledge the image of God in him. Right? The emperor is a human being created in the image of God, so is worthy of dignity, honor, respect that any other human being should be afforded. Even if he doesn't act respectfully. We are living, as you know, in a time of great political division. It saddens me greatly. There's a lot of venom out there. There's a lot of anger out there. And I think it's easy for Christians on both sides of the political aisle to wade into the anger and wade into the venom and to talk about leaders on whatever side they're opposed to as if they are subhuman. I mean, I've seen Christians on social media call some of our state officials sorry excuses for human beings. Listen, we can challenge authority without disrespecting them. And by the way, it's dangerous to begin to talk about any human being as if they are subhuman. It is dangerous. If I find myself, here's a good test. If I find myself in my heart despising, hating some political leaders, or if I find myself mocking them in my heart or even out loud in such a way that I'm treating them as less than human, I've crossed a line as a Christian. That's not my calling. My calling is not to be Saturday Night Live, right? My calling is to honor and to respect authority. That's what it means to submit to civil authorities. I think Daniel in the Old Testament is a wonderful example of what this looked like. Remember, Daniel he served a pagan king, King Darius. And Darius, remember this, set up a law that no one in the kingdom could worship and pray to any god but the king. Right? If you got caught worshiping or praying to any other god besides King Darius, you're going to get thrown in the lion's den. Now, how was Daniel supposed to submit to this law? Daniel was a servant of the one true God. Well, you know what Daniel did? He continued to honor the king, the emperor, by continuing to serve in his government, but he also honored God as God by quietly and privately in his home continuing to pray to God, right? He didn't make a big spectacle out of it. He didn't tweet, "Darius is just a sorry excuse for a leader," right? Darius is so full of himself, he's terrible. He submitted, but he also feared God at the same time. Isn't that interesting? You know what it got him? It got him thrown in the lion's den because he got caught praying. He was not exempt from the penalty of the law, even though he was one of God's people. And I think this is really important. Don't miss this. Daniel was an Israelite from the tribe of Judah. It's God's royal tribe. Daniel was royalty, but he was living in submission in a foreign land. He's an exile, like we are. We are royalty. We belong to King Jesus. We're part of him. We are royalty, but we are royalty living in submission in a foreign land. It's not our home. That's what we're called to. We're called to submit to government authority. Now, why do we do it? I'll be shorter with this. Why do we submit to government authority? Well, there's a couple of reasons you see in our text today. And the first is we do it to glorify God. Seems obvious. We do it to glorify God. Did you notice the divine thread running through these verses? Look at verse 13. He says, "Be subject for the Lord's sake to every human institution." Do it for the Lord's sake. His name is on the line here. Verse 15, "For this is the will of God." Verse 16, "Live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover up for evil, but living as servants of God." Verse 17, "Fear God." So there's the divine thread. God is the thread running through this whole thing. His name, his will, his glory. He's the reason we submit to earthly human authority. Our submission to human authority is just a reflection of our submission to him. Romans 13, which is a parallel passage to this. Listen to what it says. It says, "Be subject to the governing authorities, for there is no authority except from God. And those that exist have been instituted by God. So whoever resists those authorities resists God." Resists what God has appointed. In other words, our posture towards civil authorities reflects our posture toward God. Do we have a heart that resists him, or do we have a heart that's responsive to him? Do we have a heart that's rebellious against him? Or do we have a heart that's soft and willing to submit to him? Do we see ourselves as a law unto ourselves where we get to call the shots in our life? I have a friend who is a Christian leader and minister. And one night, my friend went to see a movie with his wife and his little boy. I think his little boy was like 8 or 9 years old at the time. And before they went to the movie that night, my friend went to the grocery store to pick up some snacks, you know, some candy and stuff. Because, you know, prices at the movie theater are just ridiculous, right? Now, they're getting ready to get out of the car to go into the theater, and my friend starts stuffing all the candy in his wife's purse. And his little boy's like, "Dad, why are you doing that? Why are you hiding the candy?" And he kind of sheepishly told his little boy, "Well, you know, you're not really supposed to bring your own food into the theater." And his little boy looked at him and said, "Dad, that's okay. We just have to obey the good rules, right? We just have to obey the big rules, the ones that really matter." And my friend's heart just sunk, not because his son rebuked him for breaking the rules, but because his son affirmed him in rule breaking. And he realized, I'm teaching my son something about how we relate to God here. I'm teaching my son that God doesn't really care about all the little rebellions in your heart. And that it's okay to ignore doing the right thing as long as you think the rule is stupid. Right? That you get to call the shots. You're autonomous. You're the arbiter of right and wrong. And when we live like that, listen, we're not glorifying God. We're taking some of God's glory from him because we are setting ourselves up as the lawgiver, the judge of what's right and wrong. That does not glorify God. But when we submit to governing authorities in big ways and in little ways, little dumb ways, like don't take stuff from HEB up to the theater, we glorify God. It's connected. We can't disconnect the two. Here's the second reason why we do it. It's not only that we glorify God with our lives, but we do it so that unbelievers will glorify God. So that people that don't yet believe in him might have a chance to glorify him. So there is a missional component to this. It's interesting. Look at verse 12. Verse 12. He says, "Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable." Why, Peter? "So that when they speak against you as evildoers," when they do, meaning they're gonna speak against you as evildoers. When they do that, so they may see your good deeds and glorify God on the day of visitation, the day that Jesus comes back. And then look what he says in verse 15. It's very similar. He says, "For this is the will of God, that by doing good," by doing good works, by doing good deeds, "you should put to silence," you should muzzle the ignorance of foolish people. In Peter's day, society did not speak well of Christians. Sometimes they were called atheists because they didn't worship the Roman gods. Sometimes they were called cannibals because they said that they were going to eat the body of their God and drink his blood. And that sounds like cannibalism to me. They were called dangerously superstitious. They were called anarchists because they would not worship the emperor. Now, what does Peter say that Christians ought to do when their culture speaks badly about them? Like, should they fight back and start a culture war? Should they retreat and start a subculture? Now, that's not what Peter says, right? Peter says, submit to the government, stay engaged where you are, and more importantly, do good where you are. Like, do good actively. Like, this is more than just being a good citizen who pays their taxes and keeps to himself or herself. Right? Actively do good. Actively seek the good of society. Actively seek the welfare of your city in which you are in exile, to use the words of Jeremiah. Actively seek good. Don't just passively obey the law. Do good. Why? So that the Gentiles, when they see your good works, will glorify God. So that you will silence ignorant and foolish slander about you. Jesus said, "Let your light shine before others so that they may see your good works and give glory to your Father who is in heaven. Listen, if you are a Christian in our culture today, you will be spoken of as an evildoer. If you haven't been already, you will be. Right? You will be called a bigot. You will be called narrow-minded. You will be called intolerant. You will be called hypocritical. You will be called irrational. You will be accused of not really loving people. Right? And people will think those things about you, not because they really know you, but just because you're associated with Jesus, or you're associated with the Bible, or you're associated with the church. They'll just think, well, that's just how Christians are, and you're calling yourself a Christian, so that must be how you are. It's speaking evil of you out of ignorance, without really getting to know what you believe, without really getting to know who you are. They will deny your goodness, even though they don't know you. I'm telling you, they will deny it. Here's what's undeniable, though. Undeniable, visible good works. It is undeniable that the most committed, most generous, most organized, most involved people since Hurricane Harvey in cleanup and relief and care, it's undeniable that the majority of those people have been Christians, the most organized. Like, Christians have mobilized more resources and more people and are continuing to do so than I think almost any other organization. It's undeniable. Here's what else is undeniable. The church in our city, Austin, has come alongside the foster care system, the adoption system, in such a way that the local government is taking notice. Like, Christians are known to be some of the most trustworthy, most generous, most hospitable and open people caring people when it comes to adopting and fostering children. Some of those people are sitting in our midst today. I'm so thankful for you if you're one of those that are moving in that direction in your life. But the government has taken notice, and the government actually wants to partner with the church in caring for kids and making the foster care system work better and giving kids homes. Keep your conduct among the Gentiles honorable. Why? So that when they speak against you as evildoers, and they will, they may see your good works and glorify God. We submit to human institutions and we do good so that those who don't yet believe in God will have a chance to glorify him. Jesus was called names. You know this, right? He was falsely accused. He was spit on. He was punched in the face. And this all just happened when he was on trial before governing authorities. And he submitted himself passively to that treatment. He took it. But it wasn't just passive obedience, because we know that Jesus actively pursued the greatest act of good the world has ever known. He actively gave himself on the cross for us, right? Do you know what happened right when that wonderful act of goodness was finished, when it was completed, right when he took his last breath? Do you know what happened? It's an amazing verse. You'd miss it when you're reading it. Luke chapter 23, verse 47, right after Jesus took his last breath, says, when the Roman centurion, who's a Gentile, saw Jesus die, he praised God. It's incredible. He became a worshiper. Like, one of the very men who crucified Jesus glorified God. It might have been the guy who drove the nails. He became a worshiper. He glorified God. That is glorious, isn't it? That's why we're called to submit to government authority, because that's what our Lord did. He was royalty living in submission, and by his submission, God was glorified, and others were drawn in to glorifying God. It's wonderful. I want you to know that we can actually live like this. I don't want you to leave discouraged that this is too hard. We can actually live like this. Look at verse 11. We'll close with this. How do we do this? Verse 11. Beloved, I urge you as sojourners and exiles to abstain from the passions, the desires of the flesh, the desires of your sinful nature, which wage war against your soul. One of the passions of our flesh is a desire to be autonomous. Like, we have this desire to be out from under authority, right? We've got this rebelliousness deep down inside of us. See what he's saying here? He's saying our problem with authority is not out here with the authority. It's actually in here. It's in our heart. It's an enslaving desire. It's waging war against your soul so that you don't want to submit to God and you don't want to submit to anyone else for that matter. But then he says Jesus has set us free from that desire, that sinful desire, by his death and resurrection. We are free people. Look at verse 16. Incredible. We are free people. Verse 16, live as people who are free, not using your freedom as a cover up for evil, but living as servants of God. See, even though we are exiles living in submission, we're actually very free people, which doesn't mean we're free to do whatever we want. That's just another form of bondage, but free to serve God in whatever he calls us to. No matter what our culture, no matter what our context, no matter what our circumstances, no matter who's in charge of the government, we're free. Like, if who we are is settled and secure, if you're settled on that, that you are the royal people of God, and that's secure, then you're totally free to serve others, to actually submit to others, to give yourselves to others, to serve and to do good for others, because you got nothing to prove, and you got nothing to lose. Because the king is secure and the kingdom is secure. It's good news. Let's thank him for this.
Thanks for listening to the podcast of Providence Church. For more resources and info, visit us online at www.providenceaustin.com.